Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Nothing says welcome home like a hidden body in the basement. It's Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
Oh, Karen Reed, it's coming again. The trial, April, is when it's supposed to begin. We'll see if we can make that deadline. Kind of doubting it, but we'll find out. Of course, most of the motions all the motions that are going to affect that trial, they're going to happen before, and we're already starting to see some of them. Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. One of the big things we saw this last week in the Karen Reed hearing, the dog. We're back to Chloe, the dog. Did she bite him? Did she not? Was it road rash? Was it coyotes? Was it a wild pack of mongoose that trampled into the neighborhood and feasted on John O'Keefe's arm that night? Or all of the above? This is one that's really up for debate. They're having the expert witness, Dr. Marie Russell, who was there in court last summer, come back in, and they're debating her qualifications for this. Yes, she was a ER person for 30 plus years as a doctor in an emergency room, saw a lot of dog bites, but doesn't necessarily put you then into the category of dog bite expert, as that's a whole different ball of wax. Is it? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to expert witnesses and their qualifications, the standard is lower than some people think. Mm-hmm. The standard is really, are they qualified by their experience, skill, or education, or some combination thereof, to opine on matters that are really outside the purview of a normal juror's understanding? And so in looking at it, you know, an ER doctor who's seen countless dog bites, I think probably meets that standard. Certainly she could be cross-examination on the lack of specificity in her qualifications, but I think she gets there.
Does she, though? I mean, there is a lot of science to it. I mean, and people argue both ways. I mean, I listen to a lot of voices every day. I don't think I'd qualify as an expert witness if somebody said, listen to this video. Is this bridge guy, if we're talking about like Delphi, which is exactly what happened in the trial. They just went to some cop and like, you think it's him? I think it's him. Did you study this? That's just my opinion. I mean, is that what we're getting into? Is that the problem with this, though, the qualifications and the gray area of what makes someone an expert just because they're kind of in that field or they are in the field of medicine, but they're not in the field of studying dog bites. And if it is, in fact, a dog bite, I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me that there's just too much gray area to say that you're that when you're not.
Those are important points. I think they're excellent fodder for cross-examination. I think that also, you know, is she the best expert they could have chosen? Maybe they would look to a veterinarian. Maybe they would look to someone who studies dogs for a living or something like that. Perhaps that type of expert might be more compelling to the jury. But will she meet this fundamental threshold to at least be allowed to testify? Yeah. That's really what the judge is wrestling with. And I think odds are she will.
I think the question is, why didn't they get a better expert? You know, I think that speaks to a lot to this. Like, let's get a real dog bite expert in here. Oh, you don't want it? You just want to stick with this one because they're going on your story? Okay, I get it. That's how the game works. But, okay, well, hopefully the prosecution can bring in a better dog bite expert that can maybe give a little more expertise on this. But then you are throwing it to the jury to go, guess what? We're both have experts. You should trust both of us. You're going to be more confused at the end of the day than anything else.
Oh, and that's by design. That's what Karen Reed's team wants. They want this confusion. They want this jury to be like, oh, well, I heard from expert one and now expert two saying the exact opposite. What do I believe? How do I reach a conclusion on that? So I think that those are all issues that are going to be at play at the trial. And, you know, sometimes you've got to go with the expert who supports your case. And perhaps that is one of the reasons why this expert is in play currently.
I would guess so. Just the fact that they keep doubling down on her expertise. I mean, it's just kind of amazing how you can have one. I mean, it's how court works, but it's still kind of baffling how one side can be completely all in. Yes, this is totally qualified. The next is like, not at all. I mean, if we're looking at it on paper, yeah, doesn't have veterinary training, doesn't have any, didn't follow any sort of published standard in dog bite identification. The thing that really struck me, though, the most was during the hearing, they said the dog is still alive. Chloe, the dog, is not dead. You could examine her if you want. I don't know how it all works. If you're measuring for teeth and where it's I would assume that that's probably part of it. They even said they did a cast of the dog's mouth. And her response when asked, you know, would that be helpful in your investigation of this? No, not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, that raises an eyebrow for me because, you know, it just like you said, a normal juror with common sense is going to say, well, to look at the dog, to look at the dog's mouth, to look at sort of how the teeth are dispersed within the dog's mouth. And I think if she says no, and I don't really care about that, that can certainly undermine the impact of her testimony.
It does. I mean, if she was all gung-ho, yeah, great, let's do it, let's see it. Sure, but to just, what investigator says, oh, we got enough evidence, I know you got a pile over here, but we're good, we don't need to see that either. It doesn't necessarily speak to even the mindset of an expert.
It's concerning because is it, you know, there's always a worry that one side or the other might try to pull the wool over the jury's eyes when they don't really believe in what they're saying. And unfortunately, these admissions by the expert kind of lend themselves to that way of thinking.
The other big problem that they're litigating right now is the timestamps on the cell phones. And basically it goes back to the how's long to die in cold things that were searched very, very early on or later in the morning. We're not quite sure. That's the thing. The thing is, with this, I thought this was kind of settled already. I don't know why it's not settled already. You had a CellBright expert come in that worked for the company that makes the program, that gave them the data they're trying to interpret. And they said, look, these aren't made, I'm just, you know, kind of paraphrasing here, but look, these are not made for public consumption. So the way this is coded is a certain way. So you have to read it this way. And then when they were informed of how to read it, yes, the timing then looked like it was much later in the morning, which made a lot more sense to the actual story of her standing next to Karen and going, how do you do this? Because Karen's shouting to look it up. And the timing is the timing. The company is saying this is how to read it. If you want to get the correct results, this is how you do it. How is it then that the defense is going to still double down, triple down, quadruple down on, no, we like our numbers better? That's great. I'm sure you do because it works better to your story. But the actual instructor who made the damn thing is saying, you're reading it wrong. This is how it works. Why is this even up for litigation on something like that?
You know, as an attorney, I can tell you, leave it to attorney to make something that is relatively simple, needlessly complicated and confusing. And that's what's happening. And I watched that back and forth in the initial trial regarding the timestamps. Yeah. And, you know, certainly the defense is entitled to present the best version of their case that they can. But there are some things that are just kind of like there. They're just kind of what they are. They're facts. And it seems like the timestamps and what the government is arguing appears to be the most credible on that. And I think this defense just trying to kind of muck it up.
Yeah. And clearly they are able to do that. I mean, do you see Beverly? Because she let both sides in on the first one, on this one, to muck it up.
Yeah.
How do you think she's going to rule on this? Again, it seems very clear. It's just a fact. It is what it is. One side's not going to like it, but that's where the judge has to be like, look, we're only dealing with what we can prove to be as a fact here. I would think that that is one of them. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between advocacy and like trying to like spin something to your benefit and just sort of like pulling something out of there and being like, no, I think it's this, mm-hmm. and this helps us more, so we're going to assert this. That being said, it would be a bit peculiar for the judge to say, hey, I thought this was cool in the first trial, but now I don't think it's cool. Mm-hmm. That would be somewhat unusual and a really reversing course from what the initial ruling.
Well, it's similar to what the dog bite expert even said the other day. We're like, you weren't very sure about this during the trial. Now you suddenly are. And is like, well, I've thought about it longer. Great. But does that really make you more sure, or just you double down on your thoughts?
Right. Yeah.
It's very confusing. And of course, overshadowing all of this, all of the Karen Reed trial and many other cases, is Trooper Michael Proctor, who is actually going to be at a hearing in the next handful of days, figuring out his future, so to speak, or lack thereof with law enforcement. Hopefully, for the sake of all these cases and anyone in the future, he's removed, but we'll see. But he's up for it. And his wrongdoing in this that we are aware of is, you know, a lot of unprofessional talk about Karen that really kind of shows a lot of bias in an investigator who shouldn't be very biased. There's a lot of question of evidence planting. That's not proven, but there's a lot of things that we can look at and go, that seems like you're tipping the scales a little bit. How do you think this is going to play out, especially, you know, if he is removed from the force here in the next handful of days? I know he's on unpaid leave, but if he's officially fired, removed, I mean, either way, he's going to be a black eye to the prosecution in all of this. How much more weight does it put on if he's completely removed now because of this?
You know, first, let's talk about the impact of the Karen Reed case. Yeah. I think it could be substantial, because that's really the whole thing defense is arguing, is that, hey, this is governmental misconduct. This is a conspiracy. This is underhanded stuff that was going on. And look, their lead investigator, one of the lead investigators, has been fired from the force. So believe us, jury. That's what defense is going to say. And then on top of that, there's going to be a cascading effect of negative influence on any case this dude touched. And so the government really has their hands full with this substantial problem.
I mean, how can they argue that? Can they go to the jury and say, look, yeah, he was totally a bad apple. We got rid of him once we were aware of it. And his involvement in the case wasn't anything more than being an asshole and very inappropriate on text messages. But I think that there's so much up to question on that. Does it go all the way to he was involved in a murder or something? I mean, I think that gets a little too far on the other side. But when you put a little bit of weight on something where there's already, you know, she's going to hang herself, if you will, just because of where the vehicle was and the evidence that exists, you don't necessarily need to add more evidence to it. And I think there's a lot of question that may have happened here. Again, never been proven, but it'll be interesting to see if anything more comes out on that angle. But once you have the stink there, it's hard to get that out.
It's not going away, and it's hard to neutralize to the jury because, you know, you go in there as the prosecutor. I'm a former prosecutor, and you want to be the folks wearing the white hats, and you're doing the right thing, and you're seeking justice, and it's these shady defense attorneys who are mucking things up. But when you have one of your witnesses who is engaged in allegedly disgraceful conduct, it really sours the impression of righteousness that the prosecution has towards the jury. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think it plays into the defense's conspiracy theory as well. Going to be hard to neutralize. They're going to have to say something like, hey, everybody's human and every profession there's bad apples, I guess.
Yeah, that will be very fascinating because I'm sure he will be on that stand as long as he's in existence when that comes around. Let me ask you this about Proctor. Why stick around for all of this? Obviously, he's on unpaid leave. He knows that everything is about to hit the fan and it's not going to work out well for him. Why not just say, guys, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm moving away. Or in something like this, is it, well, we're still going to investigate you anyway, and you're going to be required to show up these hearings, whether you quit or not?
You know, certainly professional pride can come into play in these matters. You know, he probably thinks, or perhaps he thinks that he was not overly in the wrong and made some off-color comments, whatever, but he's a good cop otherwise. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's trying to, you know, take a stand for himself on that front. But it's continuing to spiral south, and it's very public. And yeah, some might say, hey, why don't you just kind of cut your losses and call it good and start anew? But that's not where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it also helps us understand more why we are where we're at. If someone's just going to keep doubling down on their own kind of twisted prism of how they handle things. There's other cases here. Brian Walsh case. That's the Anna Walsh who was murdered, dismembered New Year's in 23. That one seems to be, I know Proctor was at the beginning of this investigation in existence, I guess you could say. That case, I don't know. I mean, unless Proctor made up all of Brian Walsh's Google searches, I think that one is kind of there. But Sandra Birchmore, that's certainly a questionable one. That's where you have a young woman, 23-year-old, who had been being violated by another member of law enforcement since the age of, I believe, 12 in the Police Explorer program. She ends up pregnant. The officer allegedly kills her, but it's ruled a suicide. And who's there when it's ruled a suicide and another officer likely killed her? Michael Proctor. That's a big problem. I think that one might even be, in terms of oversight or overstepping his bounds, I think this might end up overshadowing Karen Reed once this all gets litigated.
Very possible. And you know, what he does is he carries kind of this ominous black cloud with him now. And if there's ever any future trials in these cases, you know, the defense is going to paint him like a total villain. And juries want to see fairness in investigations. They want to see fairness in the process. And when that's not there, that can really call into question, you know, the accuracy of what the prosecution's saying and whether the jury just wants to side with the prosecution or not. And so these sort of intangible human factors that come into play when viewing someone's misconduct are very much present at the jury trial phase.
Is it harder to be a juror today than it would have been 25, 50 years ago? Is there more trickery involved, if you will? And I'm not trying to say lies or anything, but certainly there's tactics used. That's how it works. It is what it is. That's how our system is. You got to convince the side to see it your way. But it just seems like there's, when we have all these expert witnesses, like my expert's better than your expert, has it always been like this? Or have we gone into new bounds and we see what works better? And it's like the NFL is not the same as it was 25 years ago either.
Oh, of course. No, I think it's certainly gotten more difficult. You look at trials from the 1800s, and I've reviewed many of them. And it's, you know, there's a murder trial and there's this witness who hears a guy confess allegedly to a murder. And then there's another witness who heard the day before a woman screaming in the guy's house. And then there's, you know, some sort of material in the guy's house that they find. That's what the jurors have to digest. Now we're talking about high level technical issues. We're talking about the emergence of AI and the emergence of fabricating information or manipulating and modifying information in a misleading way. So they jurors definitely have a tougher time now, I think, getting to the truth than they did before.
Yeah, they almost have to be the investigator themselves and be able to vet things that otherwise you would have relied on an expert for, except you have one expert here now saying, I'm an expert and this is right, and I'm over here saying this is my right, and they're conflicting. So it makes it even harder. I do not envy anyone that's going to be on this jury when the trial resumes, supposedly in April, for Karen Reed.
Yeah, we'll see if we get there by that time. But considering there was a mistrial in the first one, I think we can expect some pretty interesting stuff and a really tough fight in the second one.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.